This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we're talking about Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man Season 1. That's a mouthful.
Wow, my friendly neighborhood Spider-Man?
Your friendly neighborhood. Yeah, that's right.
But what about yours?
I mean, hey, we'll talk about My Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man next week.
Next week.
This week it's Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, John.
We'll just talk about the battles that he's been through.
To be honest, we live in Manchester. I feel like the Spider-Man battles would be much less interesting in Greater Manchester.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the buildings, they would be cool to have some battles around with the
tall true,
buildings.
It's true. But yeah. there's not enough tall. Like, Spider-Man swinging would be so underwhelming.
Yeah, and the Arndale, just swinging through the Arndale. Yeah.
I'm on board, actually. This is a great idea.
Yeah, and then we just hear some like, oh my god, it's Spider-Man. He's going to Dwight Smith's.
He's going to the Manchester City store.
Oh my god.
We're throwing in local references now.
Yes. This is a new animation Marvel has done, its own title sequence with Marvel Animation.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. This is a different iteration of Spider-Man that we haven't seen before in a really cool style in a comic book, like original style. Really reminds me of the fantasy. No, what was the comic?
Yeah. Amazing Fantasy, I think.
Yeah, Amazing Fantasy. It goes back to that. And then throughout the show, you get to see some really cool designs in the modern take. There's some really cool references as well in the show. I think this is a pretty cool show. I mean, we did have some Marvel animation in the past with What If. I was worried what the show was going to be. I was worried that, is Marvel going to put in the effort into this, in the animation? Because animation, we talked about this loads of times, that it is a medium. We don't want to see it as like, oh, it's a kid's show. It's for kids. No, it can be more than that. I thought, this is interesting. What about you?
Yes, this is the third Marvel animation, the third show under that banner. And I thought it was really interesting because What If, as you have said, whatever. I watched season one. I didn't really think much of it. I didn't bother with the other two seasons. But then X-Men 97 was really good. And,
I haven't seen that.
It's a great show. And we haven't talked properly about Spider-Man in just about 2 years since Across the Spider-Verse. Obviously, we've talked about, you know, Venom and Madame Web and Kraven, but no actual Spider-Man.
Spum. We'll never forget you, Spum.
I'll never forget you, buddy. I love Spider-Man. I love the webhead. And one of my favorite iterations of the character is Spectacular Spider-Man. Two seasons of just amazing, spectacular, you could say, Spider-Man stories. It gets the soap opera drama of it, but also it really understands the fun and it balances those two excellently. And so coming into this one, I was very much like, okay, we'll see what this take is, but it's never going to be as good as Spectacular Spider-Man. And it isn't as good as Spectacular Spider-Man. But this is actually a very, very good show. I had a blast watching this. I had an absolute great time. And the thing that I loved the most was the pitch. Like, this show basically is a parallel dimension to the MCU. It is so similar. The Sokovia Accords are happening. The Avengers are a thing. We even get the scene in Civil War where Peter comes home and there's a billionaire in his apartment. They literally shot for shot recreate it. They even play Left Hand Free by Alt-J. So like immediately this show is just a retelling of Spider-Man's MCU story. And I can't lie, this is 10 times better than the actual MCU Spider-Man movies. I was just watching it going, oh my god, this is what I wanted from MCU Spider-Man. And this
incredible. Yeah, I agree. This is a show that I had so much fun watching. It was something to watch on a Sunday, and it's just like a slice of life but with action, a bit of mystery. It's just a really cool show and you get to know the characters. And I also agree about this is a much better version of Spider-Man that we have in the MCU, because this is more whimsical. This is Peter actually getting to know who he is about Spider-Man and what Spider-Man means to him, and looking at role models in the MCU as well, because the MCU is a bit weird for Peter, especially about role models, about like how he becomes Spider-Man with the whole thing with Tony Stark. He wasn't really becoming Spider-Man because he's got all the tech. It just felt like there wasn't really an arc, in my opinion, for Peter to understand who he is. But in this show, it did. It really did, to understand how much responsibility that he has as a superhero. And I'm really glad that didn't shy away from that and focusing on the other points of conflict about how he reveals his identity to other people and how it affects him. I thought that was brilliant that they didn't shy away from that.
Yeah, it feels like everyone in this show are real people. The side characters, I actually cared about them. I cared about his relationship with Nico, and I cared about the life of Lonnie Lincoln and Harry Osborn. It sometimes feels difficult in many superhero stories to care about the regular people, but if you can get that right immediately, you're on the right track. And we open this story with him in because of a catastrophic interdimensional-esque event with Doctor Strange, which we'll get into a little bit more in spoilers. He can't go to Midtown High, which is where he goes to in the movies, but instead he's at this other place. We have a completely different cast of characters. There's no Ned, there's no MJ, there's no Betty, no Flash, no Liz, none of that. Again, parallel dimension. This isn't an alternate universe. This is a parallel dimension. So there are so many similarities, but they change at certain points. And I really appreciate that the whole time you can feel the struggles of everyone. You can feel the drama and they have fun and there is a lot of wholesomeness in it. But again, every great Spider-Man story is always balancing those difficult real life struggles with responsibility and trying to do right by everyone, but also having fun, you know, the Spider-Man moments. There's so much cool swinging in this show. It's something that you got to get right for Spider-Man and they get it right. Like, I know that before the show was airing, a lot of people were like, oh, the animation looks bad. I didn't think the animation was bad at all. I'm no animator. There probably are like technical reasons maybe why this show is not good, but I really enjoyed it. I like the style. As you said, it harkens back to early comic books, but also all the colors, especially when Spider-Man's swinging at night.
Yeah.
The city has this kind of glow to it. All the lights in the windows, it's kind of like a pastel aesthetic. It has this wonderful atmosphere, this glow. Like the whole thing is always in golden hour when he's swinging across the city in the evening. I love that so much.
It's just wonderful. Yeah, it's weird when people compare animation in terms of like, oh, this looks bad, this is look good. But yeah, I thought the animation was lovely. It just reflected that whole whimsical element of the show. It's wholesome, but it had almost like a comic book feel to it. It felt authentic to the comic book era that we all know about Spider-Man, but not many people reflect that to that era because we got the modern MCU, we got the whole multiverse with Spider-Man, but it just felt cool.
Yeah, there are even like little comic book panels, you know, moments when it will go into some split screen, and I love just moments of expression like that. Once again, every time I watch anything comic book animation, I just kind of think this is the best way to experience these kinds of stories on screen. You can do a lot with live action, but you can do so much more. Look no further than the Spider-Verse movies. That is exactly the greatest way to experience these kinds of stories. And with that, we get some really cool visual designs. We get to see so much color and vibrancy. Quite a few heroes show up in this show. It feels like there's this big world that we are only slightly privy to. So many characters show up, but not in an invasive way, in a way that just kind of gives the world a little bit more color. But also Peter's suit itself, he starts out with this suit that is probably the most accurate homemade Spider-Man suit I've ever seen. It feels like something that genuinely a kid could have made. It's like in the Raimi movies or in the Web movies when he just makes this full suit on his own and it's like, damn, okay, what textiles course did you go on? But in this one, he's wearing like a football jersey with like a spray painted spider on it. He's even got like a gas canister and some wires for his webbing. Those are some really cool details that I would never have thought and I've never seen before, but I think really worked in just adding this low stakes, down to the ground, friendly neighborhood vibe. I loved it.
Yeah, the design for that, it felt real. And also with the parallel universe, it's so interesting when you think of that, like, what if Peter never met Tony? What if he never went to the high school? But with the Sokovia Accords as well, it was like, oh, interesting. Does that impact him in Spider-Man? You know, what will you do in terms of like saving the city? It's so cool to see that in the parallel universe, this is a different life that Peter has. And I don't know why, but it just felt like we need a new, fresh perspective. We want to see a different Spider-Man, but in this style.
It's a good point because this isn't massively comic book accurate Spider-Man. Even from the start, Uncle Ben has already passed away before he's even been bitten by the spider. It's a really different iteration than anything we've seen, but it gets the core of the character. I think it's proof that you don't need to have everything bang on as long as you get understanding the morals. And you're right, it's so cool to see the Sokovia Accords actually being a thing that is enforced by the government, enforced by heroes, and a thing that people have to struggle with. We get scenes where we see like news footage and we find out that it's a thing, but that even comes back to bite the heroes and villains of the show. That's really great. There's a bit where Nico Mexico says to Peter, oh, Captain America is like your personal hero. And I was like, yes, because to me, it makes no sense that Iron Man would be the guy that Peter Parker sides with.
Right.
I love the idea that he's actually like, yeah, no, I want to be the person who helps people regardless of what the government or the law says. And instead of him having this billionaire who he looks up to and who is a mentor, Peter's relationship with Norman Osborn is fantastic. I mean, first of all, probably the biggest name in this show. The acting is amazing all around. The voices just do a great job. But Coleman Domingo as Norman Osborn...
Oh, that was him.
That was Coleman Domingo.
Incredible casting.
I thought he was so good. And you know what? If they want to do him in the movies in some live action capacity, that would be amazing because I thought he was fantastic. But like his whole relationship with Peter is massively, massively unhealthy. You know, he is grooming him essentially. He is trying to make him into something that he doesn't want to be. And ultimately, Norman just cares about power. He just cares about respect for himself. And he's using Spider-Man in the MCU. I would argue in Civil War, Tony Stark 100% uses Spider-Man. He doesn't give him the full context. He takes him off to Berlin to fight a fight that he shouldn't even believe in. But the MCU never really addresses that. And that's fine. That's whatever they want to do. But this show, I really liked how, yeah, the billionaire isn't the good guy here. The billionaire is absolutely trying to use everyone in his arsenal, including not just Peter Parker, but numerous young people, young scientists, which is a really, really interesting angle to take.
Yeah, that whole dynamic between Norman and Peter was the main point of conflict throughout the show that kept me engaged with Peter. How does he become Spider-Man? Does he get any advice? You do get to see that a lot of comic book stories, there's someone like the elder that gives advice, but what if it's someone else that focuses on power? And that was so interesting to me of how Norman was trying to gain more power from the younger generation. It's something that we never seen from Spider-Man personally, like how he trusts people, but then the advice, which is with great power comes great responsibility. You know, what if he never heard that advice from Ben himself? And then the other thing is, I'm glad that there was more dialogue about Uncle Ben in the story. Like, it's more visual, it's more something that hits hard, you know, for May as well. There was that really nice scene at the beginning of the first episode where Peter thanks May for raising him and how Peter becomes someone responsible enough to become Spider-Man, which is just so wholesome.
Yeah, I love the idea that he's discovering for himself the idea of great power and great responsibility. It's not something that he already knows, and presumably, because we are getting a season two, as we move forward, he will continue to learn that lesson. And needless to say that this show absolutely is worth the watch. I think it's some of the best Spider-Man stuff we have had. Aside from the Spider-Verse movies, I would argue it's the best Spider-Man story that we have had on screen since Spectacular Spider-Man. And that includes all the movies as well. For me, this trumps them all. I think it truly understands it. But I want to get into spoilers, because there's a moment when Peter asks for advice from Norman. And we know that Norman's a shady guy. We know that he is using him. We can see it. And Norman says, with great power, and my heart dropped. I was like, no, not from Norman Osborn. This is like, that's the worst thing that could happen, is if Norman Osborn, who is using this boy, gives him the speech. And he says, with great power comes great respect. And I was like, no! And then Norman says, respect. And there's just this beat that you just go, oh my God, because it makes so much sense. If Ben Parker's philosophy is great power, great responsibility, Norman Osborn's has to be great power, great respect. And the way that Peter hears it, and he doesn't know if he believes it, but he hears it and he understands it and he kind of goes, okay. And he puts that into action and he kind of loses it at the Scorpion, who is a really interesting and terrifying antagonist. Like, he absolutely beats Peter up. And then the next time Peter sees him, he's scared of him, but then loses control and almost goes too far. And I love the arc throughout of basically Peter realizes he can't do this under Norman Osborn. He can't be part of Oscorp's agenda. He can't be part of the idea of using your full power, because that's not good. I loved that, because I was so scared they were going to have him get the great power, great responsibility line from Norman. I thought that was a really brilliant twist.
It's funny when you get to hear that line in different ways, especially in The Amazing Spider-Man, where Uncle Ben gets like a long-winded version of great power comes great responsibility, which is so funny to me.
If you can do things, then you can do the... And then if you don't do the thing, you have a moral obligation. And then that's what it's stake here, not choice. Responsibility. And it's like, okay
fine. Great. And that line resonates a lot for Spider-Man to understand that. But with great respect that's viewed differently for power, how much power he has, Spider-Man, but what happens with too much power? That's the deadly consequences of that. That was the most hard-hitting thing. So I was also worried that was going to be responsibility. I was like, oh, that doesn't make sense.
They do it so well, and they kind of twist our expectations there. There's a really cool thing in episode 3 or 4. So Norman has discovered who Peter Parker is. They're going to work together, and Oscorp provides Spider-Man a load of suits. And I like the idea that in this one, the idea of a massively tech-infused suit, that's a bad thing. We don't want the cape. We don't want the wings. And we see him like...
No capes! No capes!
Hey, Peter, I'm pretty sure this is a cape. I love that they try different suits. They all don't work. He has a few episodes in the white and black suit. I think it's the Future State suit. Is that right? Let me Google that.
Yeah, I think that's the Future State suit.
Yeah,
I think so.
Future Foundation? Future Foundation.
Future Foundation.
Yeah.
It was something to do with Future.
Yeah. So he wears the Future Foundation suit for a few episodes. That's the one that he gets beat to Kingdom Come by Scorpion. And there's this question of like, what colors does Spider-Man have? He wears a black suit and like, there's a child who cries at him because, you know, he doesn't look friendly. And then eventually he gets the classic red and blue and it really works. The first thing we see from him in that suit is he saves Nico. Just a really cool idea and a cool thing. I love him, but we've done a lot of talk about Peter Parker and I love how they did him in the show. But actually the character who I found myself the most invested in was Lonnie Lincoln. Guy who, you know, you're introduced to him and you think he's the regular jock quarterback. Maybe he's going to be a bit of a bully, but he's a nice guy and he's a kind guy and he's smart. Like he's good at science and he cares about his family and he ends up getting mixed up in this gang. And it's kind of horrible to see this person who's such a lovely guy, but obviously has a lot on his shoulders, a lot of responsibility himself, go down this path of being in a gang somewhere where he doesn't have those responsibilities, somewhere where he can just kind of relax. He almost knows that it's wrong, but for once enjoys having a bit of freedom. And to see him go down that path where he begins to stop missing school, he gets kicked off the football team, he loses his relationship, all because he just wants a bit of freedom and to take that weight of expectation off him a little bit. His arc is so compelling. And then there's a moment when they do this quite a lot in the show. For Spider-Man fans, it's like the great power, great respect thing. You know what something means. And so there's a moment when the head of the gang is like, oh, we're going to give you a nickname. We'll call you Tombstone. And I was just like, no, because I didn't realize who Tombstone's identity was. But obviously I know who Tombstone is. He's in Spectacular Spider-Man. He's in Spider-Verse. Is he in Miles Morales, the game?
I don't know.
He's in one of the Spider-Man games. So you know Lonnie is going to become a villain. Going down that path, he has been named Tombstone. And then he gets the kind of unbreakable powers at the end as well. And he's still not a bad guy. But it's heartbreaking that through all these things, you just know this is going to be a tragedy.
Yeah, it just sucks because it's just so wholesome. Lonnie being a genuine good person. It's funny that Peter doesn't get bullied for being a nerd a lot in this show. It's just really nice. So should we get into spoilers?
We're in spoilers.
Well, I thought
we're in it.
You didn't mark the spoiler territory.
Didn't I? I feel like I did.
I can't remember.
Welcome to spoilers.
Wow. This is great. Wow. But one thing that surprised me.
Yes.
Was just one moment. It was Daredevil.
I forgot.
It's so cool just to see that Peter is an actual character in the story that isn't helped by superheroes a lot, you know, like superheroes that take the spotlight. In this one, the names are just the backdrop. You do get to see them like, oh, that's so cool, you know, for a cameo or something different. But Daredevil, oh my God. I was like, wait, that's Matt Murdock. Oh, what a week. What a week, because I've been watching Daredevil Born Again.
Yes.
And then I've been reading Daredevil graphic novel. Oh, it's just wonderful. I'm just like, I'm on a roll right here. I'm just reading all this amazing Daredevil stories, and then you do get to see him in action in animation form, which is so cool. I'm like, oh my God.
Played by Charlie Cox as well.
Yes. So, I was like, oh my God.
It's so great. And he's got this awesome like black and red suit. And at the end, we get a hint to him being part of this larger investigation of Oscorp. Again, it makes the world feel lived in. And the action scene with him is so cool on this rooftop, and like the camera moves, and they're like fighting on helicopter blades. It's really, really sweet. But for me, as much as I loved Daredevil, the thing that excited me most was Doctor Strange. Not in the first episode, but in the finale, when Doctor Strange returns after having his whole skirmish at Midtown High, and they're like, hey, you were the guy who was at the Midtown. He was like, what? No, I don't know what you're on about. And Norman Osborn, he has been using all these kids, these scientists, to create this portal into outer space. And Doctor Strange comes in and says, hey, don't do this. He does it. He unleashes some sort of symbiote-esque creature. And Doctor Strange has a fight with it. And then during the fight, Doctor Strange opens a portal and he falls through it into episode one. He goes back in time and he's at Midtown High and he realizes...
It's a closed loop.
And that's how the spider gets onto Peter and bites him. But that spider was genetically engineered by Oscorp using Peter's DNA to create a replica of the spider. So they bootstrap paradox it. They bootstrap paradox it, John. I was so excited because I've never seen this kind of thing before. It was so cool.
Yeah, that's so cool to me because it goes back to episode one and it's like Strange and Peter talk about fate, how fate exists and how some things happen for a reason and then we find a way to go around that. You know, there's events and then there's answers for that. And for Strange to say that you got a bright future, that's just so wholesome, you know.
Yeah.
And then you get to see a big head in the sky.
Yes,
you know,
I was going to mention that. The Watcher.
What does that mean, man? Is there something really happening in terms of the timeline for that particular universe?
That's going to be interesting, all the implications that they're building up in the animated corner of the universe. I doubt it's ever going to be in any of the movies, but like maybe they'll do their own thing. Maybe it will be in the movies, who knows? But it's cool that Peter gets to know that he's doing well from another hero. He doesn't rely on it. He doesn't need it. He doesn't need to know that he's doing okay, but the fact that he gets it is kind of cool. And he has that beautiful final switch in the final episode where he's like, hey, if Doctor Strange thinks I'm doing okay, then I must be doing fine. And we end the series on a really exciting note. There's so many little teases for what's to come, and I'm so excited to see where that's going to go. He manages to free himself of Norman Osborn. He manages to have all of his friends. Obviously, Lonnie's still going down the path that he is, but Nico and Peter, they have the classic, you didn't tell me your identity, fallout. And I thought that was handled really well as well. And they're coming back together and Lupin and Harry. There's a lot that we haven't talked about, but I think it is really good. Before we give our scores, the one thing that I didn't quite like about this show, we have a lot of villains. There's a lot of kind of like villain of the week and they build them quite well. I loved Norman Osborn. I loved Scorpion. I loved Doc Ock, who we haven't really spoken about, but he's also there. But I feel like the villains could have been a little bit more developed. Maybe if we had more episodes or longer episodes. Again, classic streaming. The show only released over the course of like 2 weeks. Should have been 2 months. But I really I wanted more, I guess, is my criticism.
Yeah, that's my criticism as well, is that we should have had more episodes.
Sure.
It's just so weird that it's just only 10 episodes. And it was like, oh, that's over. That just ended really quick. I was just so invested. I was like, this is so great.
But it is good that we have the assurance that we're getting a season two. This isn't like The Acolyte, where you watch it and you're like, oh my God, what happens next? Cancelled. This time you're like, oh my God, what happens next? We'll find out next year. That at least gives me some semblance of hope. Hopefully it's not cancelled like Spectacular Spider-Man was. What are you going to give it out of 10?
I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Nice. I'm going to give it a 9. Absolutely loved it, mate. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you liked it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week we're going to be doing Invincible Season 3, another animated superhero thing, and this one with longer episodes and a bit more, hopefully, to get into.
Yes, I'm excited for that. And you can follow us on Instagram at Out of Time Film Pod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asphalt on Blue Sky for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to Elgin Smith for the excellent theme and Roland Phillips for vocals of Always. And I think that's everything. Take what you're given.
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.